Hi, I'm Tom Savini, the director of Night of the Living Dead 90. I was really pleased to have Columbia buy this film, because it means getting this wonderful Columbia logo at the beginning of my film, my first film, a logo that I grew up watching and seeing before, you know, some of my favorite movies. This shot here, I'm glad that they did this. This was the camera assistants, Dave Frederick, Greg Collier. They sat around one night and pointed their camera at the moon, figured out where it was going, and did a time lapse on this thing. It kind of sets the mood, you know, because it's Night of the Living Dead. We begin with the night, this beautiful moonshot going. Of course, then we go right to daylight with the opening scene. My plan at the beginning of this was to have the whole beginning in black and white, which would have been easing the audience into a remake of this cult classic Night of the Living Dead, which was in black and white. My idea was to start this in black and white and just ever so slowly start going into a sepia tone and then maybe slowly bringing in the color. This is out in Washington, PA. Dirt roads outline the cemetery. That's my car, my old Mercedes. It was green, it was all beat up. They painted it white. I sold it to the company because I knew it was going to be wrecked. And unlike the first film, I didn't just want this car to go scraping a tree. I wanted to destroy this car. Well, as much as possible. Which would have been a little different than the first film.
One day out of your life.
One day.
This is all simulated fog. Lots of fog machines going out there. I'm spending more time. This is very early in the morning too. I think it's about 8 o'clock in the morning.
And you know why?
Don't start.
She couldn't possibly be buried in the city. No, that would have been much too easy. She knew I'd have to be the one to drive you up.
This dialogue that you're hearing between Patty Tomlin and Bill Moseley, Barbara and Johnny. We recorded this one night in the cemetery, just sitting in the back seat of a car. Again, in keeping with the first film, we had to say, they're coming to get you, Barbara. If anybody knows any lines from the original Night of the Living Dead, it would be that one. People mimic it all the time. They're coming to get you, Barbara. And also this I wanted to show that they're in the middle of nowhere by showing this big wide shot of no houses around. The idea was to isolate them right away, show that they're in the middle of nowhere. If they needed help, there's no way they could just run out to a 7-Eleven or to a telephone somewhere and get help.
You really are afraid of this place.
You never stop. Love of God, Johnny.
This all follows right along with exactly what we had planned in the storyboards.
Just get it over with.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Bill Moseley, if you don't know, played Platehead in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. That's when I first met him and thought he would be a perfect Johnny. Patty Tomlin, I've known Patty Tomlin for 30 years. Went to college together, actually. First time I ever met Patty, she was kicking the shit out of her boyfriend in a gym at Carnegie Mellon University.
He wants you.
Now remember this mother. Remember there's a reason why the picture of the mother is on that tombstone, and I'll explain it to you later. And there's a reason why she's wearing a funny hat.
He's going to hear you.
And this is the first manipulation that we tried to do, based on hoping your knowledge of the first film would carry over. This is Pat Reese. I wanted you to think that he was a zombie, just like in the first film. But he's not. He's apparently a mourner who was attacked. He actually apologizes here. I love Pat Reese because of his face. He looks like a zombie. The point is to get your attention on Pat walking away so that we could do this. Have him turn, and then the real zombie comes out. Great funk zombie. Quite obviously a zombie. Now when she kicks him in the face right there, that's a fake leg. I wanted to make sure we had a fake leg so I could make contact on that zombie's face. I wanted you to see him get kicked in the face by a foot, and not just stage it like a stuntman would have done it. Poor Patty. We started her off as this very prissy little, kind of a homely girl. what happens to Bill Moseley. A little trip action. Clunk. Oh. People groaned in the movie theater when they saw that. That was actually a fake dummy that we built of Bill. Specifically, to crush his cheekbones against that tombstone. Greg Funk has been an assistant of mine, an intern, and a stuntman. And he would be perfect. I thought he'd be perfect to play this part because it's a physical thing. And he was there in the shop. Why not cast his face and make him one of the first key zombie that you see? I also thought that zombies, you know, in previous films, zombies were all these ugly guys with facial distortions. Now here's a guy, kind of good-looking guy in a business suit. Only here do you realize he's a zombie. She doesn't know it quite yet. The idea was to put a costume on him that looks like something that a mortician would, the way morticians dress cadavers. Yeah, and that is, you know, slit up the back, make it easier to put clothing on him. His autopsy scars are coming apart. This is Tim Carrier, by the way. He was in charge of teaching zombies how to move. The idea being that if you're a zombie, then it's your body was hung on a fence, the life is all gone from it, something else takes over, and how would it move? How would something that doesn't know how to move a body move the body? Tim was in charge of teaching people how to do that. To hurt this car seriously. Now, because it's a Mercedes, I wanted it to look like these people came from, you know, we wanted this to look like they came from they were affluent, they came from an affluent family. And the reason the car is white, because, you know, they're good facing bad, the whole Evil Dead thing, good versus bad. And I heard a rumor that somebody in the production office, maybe the production manager, actually sent footage of that car wreck to Mercedes and got a free car out of it. Because it showed that when that car hit the tree, that you know, it collapsed right up to the interior of the car. It didn't go any further. It stopped right before it got inside the car, because Mercedes are built so well. Now look here, Patty is in bare feet. See the gravel in the foreground here in front of the camera? I didn't want to cut away. I wanted this to be a long dolly shot. Now, right here, somebody is behind that trash can putting shoes on Patty Tallman so that she can continue walking toward us on that gravel and not hurt her feet. Up with John Landis to do Innocent Blood, one of the first things he mentioned was Night of the Living Dead, and he said, "Great girl." If you can see that signpost on the house, the name of the people who live there, it says M. Celeste. Only one reviewer of all the reviews I got from all over the country picked up on what that meant. In fact, I got an email just yesterday. Somebody asking me about the significance of the M. Celeste. Was it the Mary Celeste, the Mary Celeste you're talking about? And it was. The intention was to associate this with the wreck of the Mary Celeste. It was a boat, a yacht, I forget what kind of boat, that they discovered beached somewhere. With cigarettes still smoldering in the ashtray, food cooking on the stoves. But nobody was there. Same thing. Patty walks into this house. There's food cooking. I wanted to do a close-up of that frying pan, but it would have interrupted the flow of this particular sequencer coming through. But you do see that there's something cooking and left unattended because of the smoke coming out of there. And then we had Patty turn the oven off, of course, or the stove off. A little creaking noise. Some of this is a homage to the first film George likes to have. usually has, these stuffed animal heads in almost everything he does. This is a homage to George and to the first film. It's leading into that little surprise. There's a suspense building here. What's this blood coming from? This is something new. We didn't see this in the first film. Is somebody alive? Another little surprise. There was a shot of that hand hitting the wall. I don't know why we didn't use that. This is my good friend Pat Logan, who did that stunt himself. Not hitting the carpet with his face. That was a dummy of Pat. 6 weeks before Pat did that stunt, he was in a horrible motorcycle accident. His collarbone, I think they took out his spleen. I mean, he went through some major surgery, broken ribs, and still went into the harness and did that stunt. Pat's a Pittsburgh policeman. This is Derek. Derek really looks like that. We did hardly any makeup to Derek. Really cool filmmaker in his own right. Derek, dummy, boom! Okay. That was important because when you see Derek again, he looks like his body is representative of a pickup truck hitting you like that. Introduction to Tony Todd. All this stuff is right along with the storyboards right here.
Anyone else inside?
Tony Todd. You know, we had a...
Huh?
We went to New York. I think we went to California to cast this movie. Patty we cast before anybody, really. But Tony Todd, we auditioned Eric LaSalle from ER. I think Larry Fishburne came in, or at least his name was mentioned, his work was mentioned. But Tony Todd walked in the casting session, we handed him the script, he left the room. 5 minutes later, he came back without the script, had everything memorized, and in the audition, just poured out real tears. And I closed the book right there, I said, that's it. We're looking no further for Ben. This is the guy. Also, he's similar in look and height to Dwayne Jones. I wanted to cast this movie with people who were very similar looking to the people in the first film. I didn't want the audience to have to make that kind of an adjustment. Except for Barbara, because I knew Barbara was going to go through a big change compared to the first film. Rubber frying pan, whack. That was real contact on that actor's face with the real rubber frying pan. I didn't want to pull any punches. I wanted you to feel the people getting hit by fists, tire irons, crowbars. I wanted you to actually see the contact. If there was going to be anything different in this film from other movies you've seen, you would actually see the contact on the people. Rubber tire iron. Rubber tire iron. Fireplace poker. Real fireplace poker. Rubber pat. Retractable crowbar. Whack. Breakaway glass. If there's ever a catatonic state for Barbara, in the first film, she was in a catatonic state and stayed in that state. This is the closest that Patty comes to that, and the longest, the beginning of her getting into that state. She doesn't stay in it very long, but this is it. She can't talk. She's sort of in shock.
Look, talk to me, girl. Do you have a car? Do you have a car?
I know my
windows. They're not strong enough to break through the door, but they can get through the window glass.
This is a lot different than the first film. We're in broad daylight, and things are happening left and right. It isn't just walking in the house and finding a body at the top of the steps. they're still out there. They have to protect themselves from a small band of zombies now. I want to create a suspenseful moment here by actually showing that doorknob turn a little bit so you think that the zombie is right outside the door where Ben is looking. Okay, quite obviously the zombie is there. He's at the door. To me, the best scares come from suspense. Anybody can jump up and scare you and go boo, but the best scares, as Hitchcock says, come from suspense. So we think the zombie's by the door. Ben's going to try to get a glimpse of him. Hopefully this was a chair jumper. For the actual physical contact on this, so that when Ben hits him with his rubber tire iron, actually see the contact. Whap, contact. No. Here, Derek is actually standing in a hole that we dug in the lawn, and the twisted legs and feet. The broken body is all attached to him, his back behind him. This is a case where what you don't see is sometimes more effective. You know, we could have gotten a fake head and driven this thing through it, but the way you created it in your own mind is probably better than we could have shot it. Also, it allowed me, in thinking that the MPAA would cut a lot of stuff, and keeping the scene intact. I think the crossing of the... when Ben crosses himself, when we cut back to Patty, I think we try to get more just like a reflex action from her without any commitment to any, religious thing. At this point here, we've gone beyond the grabber, which you call the grabber at the beginning of the film. Show some action, establish some characters, and just show some stuff. People go to movies to see things happen, not listening to people talk. Unless, of course, you're watching My Dinner with Andre. This is certainly not My Dinner with Andre. But I would say this is probably at the point where we've gone beyond the grabber.
We'll hold up here. Hope that some help comes. My name is Ben. What's your name?
Barbara.
Now, look here, Barbara. I don't need you falling apart on me, you understand? I see what you did over there. I know you can fight when you have to. But you have to now, right now. Fight what you're thinking, fight what you're feeling. That fight will keep you strong, keep you thinking straight.
What's happening?
I don't know. Nobody knows.
I don't think we ever had to do that little trick with blowing fumes in somebody's eyes. This is the beginning of the night. Now we really are going to go into Night of the Living Dead. A few visual examples of some time going by. Establish the threat. There are zombies outside. They're trapped in the house. Now it's night. You're not going to be able to see them that much better. The threat is still out there. This is the, these are not sets. This was a real house in Washington, PA. No electricity, no water. They eventually remodeled this whole place and sold her for about $125,000 plus 80 acres surrounding it. I almost bought it. Thought, would it be cool to have the house that Night of the Living Dead 90 was shot in?
One guy is saying it's escaped prisoners on the loose from up in Hennessy. Another guy is saying it's some kind of chemical spill making everybody go crazy. They don't know shit. How do they explain a man walking around with his neck broken?
Story-wise, we're following, not a frame-by-frame remake, but we're following story-wise the same events that happened in the first film.
Down in Evan City, off for a good time.
Except, of course, for Big Fat Uncle Reach there.
Assholes trying to round them up and put them in the back of trucks.
But in my mind, we had to make this a little visually more interesting, in that you're just showing more things, more grotesque things to look at, as much death as possible. You know, one of the quandaries that I had before doing this was how to make zombies scary again. Because it's almost like the Frankenstein, the Wolfman movies when I was a kid. They were scary. I believe they really existed. And then when they teamed them up with Abbott and Costello, with Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein, you know, that was the death knell for Frankenstein ever being scary again. Of course, it propelled the careers of Abbott and Costello from that point. But the same thing was happening with zombies. You had the zombie beer commercials, those Joe Piscopo bits on Saturday Night Live. You know, how the hell do you make zombies scary again? And my idea was, we got to get and to emphasize death, what death means. The idea of there were things I had planned at the beginning with creepy crawly maggots all over this dead thing in the field. The maggot scene and Barbara's attitude when they're driving by the tombstones at the beginning of the film. I wanted you to see those the names on those tombstones, and if it was obviously a child because of the dates on this tombstone, or a woman or a man, to actually hear, Barbara would hear slices of life from in her mind. She would hear a guy coming home from work, honey, I'm home, or children playing, and you would be looking at these tombstones and realizing that in that hole, in that dirt, under that granite, is the case for what was once us, a human being, a happy child, a loving mother. Anyway, to make death a thing that you would think of before you ever saw a zombie. So that, in fact, we, when we started this, one of the things we said we weren't going to do was call them zombies. Let's call them something else. Because to me, a zombie implies Haiti and voodoo and something other than what I was after in this film. But, you know, it was just too hard to think of. I mean, we could have called them dead things. We could have called them, carcasses. It just got easier to call them zombies. We were used to calling them zombies.
Mean son of a bitch got some kind of...
So the idea of throwing Uncle Reed in there, and the farmer zombie and the guy on the porch was to start that thing going. Dead things that are walking around.
One of those things, Jake.
And close proximity to these people. They have to make physical contact with them. In the first film, I think they were out there. The zombies were walking around. You could see some long shots of them. They threw some fire at them eventually, but they were mainly running away from them and locking themselves up. Away from the zombies. Here in this film, they're closer to. They actually had to touch them physically, and Tony did a great job. I mean, there's pity in his eyes over these things, because they were once us. They were once people walking around eating pizza. You know, doing the things we do. And he's sad about this. I mean, these are real tears coming out of him.
This is pure.
Life was turned around, you know. And he was talking about the diner. Isolation. Nobody around. They're in the middle of nowhere. But there is that gas pump. We see it. Have they seen it yet?
Damn. Doesn't take long for the world to fall apart, does it?
There's Pat Logan, Uncle Reach. This was thrilling to some people. It's the same effect, I think, that Dawn of the Dead had on people. The idea of being surrounded by things you have to protect yourself from and probably eventually kill to do that, and finding guns and bullets. A little safer now. In Dawn of the Dead, you were in a shopping mall. Who would not love to be in a deserted shopping mall and take what you please? No wonder they didn't leave the shopping mall. I like the shadow of Ben on the wall there. It's almost like a creepy spider going up. I wanted spiders to play a part in this film. In fact, the tailor, our prop master, collected jars. I'll get back to that in a second. Jars of spiders, and there's a scene later on where I'll tell you where we're going to use them. This guy here obviously couldn't deal with it. This is a real amputee that we hired.
All right.
Decorated his arm to look like it had been eaten off.
No worries.
And I guess he couldn't take it and killed himself.
What is it?
It's nothing. It's nothing. It's all right.
Now, what I wanted to happen here, I wanted Ben to reach for that rifle. And when he pulls it and grabs it and pulls it to himself, the guy hangs on to it and actually comes up toward Ben and like almost falls on Ben and has to push him back. But we opted not to do that at this moment. And the storyboards reflect that. It was more important to get the gun away from this guy who's obviously dead. Maybe in retrospect we should have done it. Just put another little chair jumper in here to make you unsafe. To not know what we're going to throw at you from around the corner. Of Tom Tolles, Harry.
Right, don't shoot, mister! It's just us.
And Bill Butler as young Tom.
Tom Bender, sir, that's me.
Harry? What's going on?
This is Harry Cooper. That's his wife calling down in the cellar. They got a sick little girl down there, too. My woman's down there, too. That's Judy Rose.
I forget who suggested Tom Tolles to me. They said, here's this guy. He was in Henry, the Portrait of a Serial Killer. I still have not seen that film, although Tom did give me a copy of it.
Aren't you going to answer?
But when I saw his picture, I thought, this guy, he looks so much like Harry.
We could have used some help.
Hey, maybe you can.
I think they also sent an audition tape on this guy, and I liked his voice, I liked his eyes, and I liked his attitude.
You just heard some banging around is all.
No, no, that ain't right. We heard the girl calling out, asking if anyone was here.
Bill Butler, I was going to hire a friend of mine, Kevin, to play young Tom. But then Bill Butler sent us this audition tape, and it wasn't just my choice, my decision. You know, George Romero, Chris Romero, everybody was in on the decision, but I agreed with them. This guy had the best audition, the best tape. Plus, he was, you know, shorter. Kevin was much taller. He was almost taller than Harry. Notice the Pittsburgh Steelers cap. Let me put as much Pittsburgh on this guy as possible. T-shirts, hats.
We walked in over to be with Satchel, you know. Radio said there was some kind of trouble. We didn't see nothing. We didn't see nothing. Home to here, we didn't see nothing.
Damn it! We have heard all this before!
I didn't hear before, Cooper.
And the idea, it was my idea to put Tom in a tuxedo, not just people driving around like in the first film dressed up. They were on their way someplace. They were on their way to a party, banquet, a wedding, something. Just having a tuxedo on him says they were stopped, just like Ben, just like Barbara, en route to something else in their lives, in their quite normal lives. Until this point.
You don't exactly look like neighbors yourself.
Truck. Outside, out of gas.
Gas.
Conflict. Drama is about conflict. This is the beginning of the conflict between Harry and Ben.
You're willing to take that chance?
Face to face, nose to nose. Oh, this is right from the story, boys. I shot this entire movie on paper first.
5 miles before we find any real help.
Thinking that any mistakes we were going to make would not cost any money if we made them on paper before the crew was there every day. It also saves time and trouble, and coming from directing for television where you have to shoot, you know, a half an hour episode in 4 days, the quickest way to do it is to shoot it on paper first and just follow your plan. Although on this film, time kept us from following the plan too religiously. I mean, these unforeseen problems, the idea of, you know, how many takes can you shoot in a day, and just getting the basic stuff done.
And I'm not going out there until I know what all the options are.
What damn options? And who the fuck gave you the right to decide for the rest of us?
But so far, we are right according to plan, right according to the storyboards.
My own ass. Now, you want to go down to that cellar? Go. Nobody's stopping. Damn it, Helen, will you quit yelling at me? I can't think straight with you yelling at me!
You know, Cooper, I've only been around you a minute or two.
And this is the territory thing going on here.
I'm sure you feel the same about me, so let's just...
Harry wants to hide in the basement, Ben wants to stay up here, but mainly, I think, because he doesn't want to be anywhere near Harry. If he wants to go down to the basement, he can be down there by himself. Turns out that Harry was right. He might have been safer in the basement, as you all well know.
I said, Judy Rose and I... We wasn't here more than 10 minutes, and Mr. Cooper, he come banging on the door, you know. We let him in, him and his wife. And I seen that a little girl was hurt, so I tried
This movie was also Night of the Living Dead for the crew. We were shooting at night, except for that opening sequence. We would, you know, go in there at like 6 o'clock at night, and 7 o'clock in the morning we'd be driving away, so it was all night shoots, and we... In some cases, we're the living Ted walking around here.
He was dead. I know he was.
What happened?
Uncle Reed, he went after my cousin Satchel, you know. He went after him like, I don't know.
Anybody else in the house?
No, just,
Tony Todd has gone on to do the Candyman series, and then played a lead Klingon in some of the best episodes of Star Trek: Next Generation.
I mean, Uncle Reed coming after him and all, you know. I run down here and got the shotgun, but what could I do? You know, I couldn't imagine shooting Uncle Reed. Couldn't imagine doing a thing like that.
Patty Tallman went on to do.
I told everyone to go down the cellar.
The Babylon 5 series. But she also, in case you missed her, played a part in Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery. When Austin Powers goes to the disco and a woman comes up and asks him for his order and he slugs her. That was Patty Tallman. When you cut to her on the floor, it's a stunt guy. When he says, it's a man, baby. Well, it was Patty before it was the man, baby.
We'd be able to break through the door. We'd be cornered down there. No way out. We'd do better fighting them off here where there's still some way to escape.
A way out is a way in. The window.
Tom Tolles went right from this film to Stuart Gordon's The Pit and the Pendulum with Lance Henriksen. In fact, I spent a couple of days with Tom in Rome at the Vatican. They wouldn't let Tom into the Vatican because he was wearing shorts. So we had to go find a pair of pants for Tom. Same thing happened with my girlfriend. We had to find, we borrowed a skirt from some woman so she could put it around her shorts and walk into the Vatican.
Judy Rose, come on up. We need your help.
You're crazy. You're out of your minds.
This is Judy Rose.
Patty, you know, I directed Patty in one of my Tales from the Dark Side episodes called Family Reunion, where she plays a werewolf. She and her 11-year-old son play a werewolf. I wanted her to star in my first Tales from the Dark Side, but the producers wanted somebody else, but I still brought Patty in to do the stunts. Patty is a major stunt player as well in Hollywood. She was the double for Gates McFadden in Star Trek: The Next Generation. In fact, in the movie, First Contact, I think it was, where it begins on the pirate ship or something.
You lame brains!
When Gates McFadden is pushed overboard and falls in the water, it's Patty Tallman, who was pregnant at the time with her son. I think that's the first time he uses the lame brains line. which I think is his. I don't think it's in the script. I think he just was improvising here and calling them lame brains.
What's happening?
They decided to stay upstairs.
What about us?
It's safer down here.
What about Sarah?
It's safer down here, Helen.
There's just that one hammer. Here, use this. Nail him up quick and dirty. Get the windows covered as fast as you can. We'll go around later and reinforce them. Anybody find any keys, hang on to them.
How many people are up there?
There's two more.
And they've got the gun.
No, they've got two guns. They might have 100 guns for all I know, but it doesn't matter because it's safer down here.
We're going up. We've got to get help for Sarah.
I'm not opening that door, Helen, and neither are you. And if you try, so help me out.
You Sarah. What? Is your daughter lying there? We have got to get her to a doctor.
There's no doctors upstairs, Helen, and there's no way out of here. None of those yo-yos has a car! What a place to be stuck. In the middle of nowhere. A bunch of yo-yos.
Fever's gotten worse.
Look, she's gonna be all right. Somebody will come, we'll get out of here. We're all gonna be all right.
Did you find anything? I'm done over here.
They're crazy. They're out of their minds. You bunch of yo-yos!
Bill Butler, last time I saw Bill Butler, he was working for K&B Effects.
This is the last of the big stuff, huh? I'm not gonna do it. Hey, Tom, give me a hand.
And the blonde lady here, this is Kate Finneran. I forgot to talk about her when she came out of the basement. Katie has gone on as well. She left Carnegie Mellon University where I met her. And she's in New York. And she is a working actor on Broadway, does soap operas.
They're so small. We could just walk right past them. We wouldn't even have to run. We could just walk right past them. We have the guns. If we're careful, we could get away. You told me to fight. Well, I'm fighting. I'm not panicking. This place is not safe, not upstairs or down. We should leave before it's too late.
Look, I know you want to get out of here. And so do I. And we're going to do it. We're going to figure out a way to get to that gas and we'll be gone. Now, you're doing fine, all right? I'm doing fine. We're all doing just fine. We're going to make it. We're careful. Like you said, we've got to be careful.
Get them doors down and nail them up.
That's it! Nice going, Tom! Come on!
Is she crazy or what? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Tommy.
Wait a minute. All right, nail it up. Nail it up.
No.
This guy, I wish I can't think of his name right now. Our lead zombie. He's the Mr. Magruder zombie. I was in a diner in Washington, PA, and this guy was sitting there having my knees own business, having lunch. I walked up to him and I said, hey, you know, we're doing this zombie film in town. I think you'd be a great zombie. He wasn't offended at all. He was very happy. In fact, he got on the poster. He was at all the premieres. I think he still writes to me every now and then. Saw that he sees the movie on television or HBO or something.
Hold on. Come on, Tom. Tom, hold on.
This woman here, I don't know her name, but she owns the house. Let's put her in the movie. She did a great job. I think that's the only time you see her right there. Would you mind just please walking into frame, you know, in front of your house? She can tell her neighbors and friends.
Hey, Tom. Wait a minute.
Ben does not want Tom to go up there because I think that's his cousin upstairs, lying there with a gunshot through the head. It's a nice touch for the Ben character to be considerate of Tom.
It's all right. Come on. Don't look at it.
Patty says this, the great line that everybody's thinking but never says. They're so slow, we can walk right around them. It's like Frankenstein, this big scary monster, but you can outrun Frankenstein. You can outrun these zombies. And she says it for the first time in this whole Living Dead thing.
No good.
Better than nothing, Ben.
No.
This is something we invented on the spot. These doors were so fragile. In order to punch home the idea that these doors are not strong enough, I told Ben, just punch a hole in it.
Hey, Tom! Television! Check it out and see if anything's on.
Found something. Telling you what to do.
We had all these tools and all this lumber. We had to add the tools because I couldn't. It wasn't believable to me that they would just suddenly find this lumber. So if we put tools around, then it looks like there's some construction going on. In fact, we even threw it in the dialogue so that people would know there's construction going around on, and that's why there's this lumber. Luckily, this lumber floating around. And I think later on Tom remembers that all the doors they took off are in the basement, which saves the day because these are definitely things they can pound against those windows to keep them safe.
Some kind of stupid.
What?
Them old doors. The ones we took down, they're all in the cellar.
Now this next thing is right out of the storyboards. Watch the transition when Ben throws the lumber down to the bottom floor. When the lumber hits, go right down to the basement. These things were obviously not shot in the same day, but it gives us a sense of continuity here.
Said they were going to board it up. Board it up.
I wanted to do a lot more of that, but again, it was time.
Right, Helen? I refused. Right! I refused! You know why?
Because time can be your enemy sometimes.
Stupid idea. The cellar is the only safe place in the house. You watch. You just watch. They're going to come begging for us to let them in down here before this is all over.
And what will you do then, Harry? Will you open the door then?
Mr. Cooper?
Of course, now it's turned into something more than just protecting yourselves from these strangeness that's going on outside. This is a power play.
God's sakes, Harry.
The continuing power play between Tom and Ben.
Mr. Cooper, can you hear me?
But they need the doors.
Cooper? You open this door right now! We need those doors, Cooper. Cooper, I got a shotgun out here. You open this door, you motherfucker, I swear I'll blow this shit. Cooper!
What do you hope to accomplish?
Shut up, Helen!
I'm counting to three, Cooper. Then I'm coming through.
We're going to open!
I wasn't involved in the post-production on this thing. Now, that slap right there, I wanted that to be... a really loud crack. I really wasn't there when they laid those sound effects in. In fact, there's a sound effect completely missing when Uncle Reach hits the floor. There was the sound of, 300 pounds of blubber hitting the floor. That's not there. Neither was this, the slap here wasn't, loud enough for me. I also did this thing in the cemetery when, it's just in the Barbara is alone in the frame, and Johnny suddenly leaps into the frame, sort of like a little jump, a little scare. Not a big scare, but just wanted to start establishing that would happen. People would jump into the frame when you least expect it. And this is another moment like that coming up here. I wanted Katie Finneran's character to just pop in and break up this little fiasco going on here. But the thought was that it would be too much of a surprise, so they made her shoot a scene of Katie hearing something going on before you actually see her appear, like right here. The whole purpose of this is so this next scene wouldn't be too big of a jump. Seeing her pop in like that would have been maybe a little scary to me.
Tommy's house! Here's your playing Brewster with it! I'd like to know where you'd all be if we didn't let you in here! Where would you be if we kicked you the hell out?
Patty's now the gun-toting mama and not the catatonic Barbara from the first film.
Come on, let's try and work together and get some of this damn shit done!
Covered.
These moments here between Harry and Ben, when Harry does this, takes up. This is his idea. He suggested this, covering her with his coat. He may have even volunteered the line about, "Do you want the door under my daughter too?" or something like that. Okay, Barbara's getting ready for action now. She's going to get more military looking. But into this movie, she's Sigourney Weaver.
How'd she get hurt?
One of those people bit her on the arm.
What? You want this one too?
We have to get help. We have to get a doctor for Sarah.
We're gonna try. Since you ain't doing nothing, Cooper, maybe you want to start looking for those keys.
What keys?
Keys to the gas pump out back.
You mean there's a car?
It's a truck. The gas pump is locked. The keys should be anywhere!
Yeah, I was thinking about the difference between a black and white movie and a color movie. The original being in black and white, this of course being in color. Roger Ebert had a special on at the movies, or one of those shows that he did with Gene Siskel, where he actually showed scenes from a horror movie and a comedy in black and white and in color. And his point was that the black and white horror movie was scarier and the black and white comedy was funnier. Going on in this scene. going on in every room. Again, it's the suspense that to me was important, that makes things scary. That Tom trying to get away from that zombie, McKee looking for the car keys, Mr. Magruder's burst in, Tom doesn't want to go anywhere near these people, but they need his help.
This is definitely not going to work.
That is a music box. Now, from this point on, the music box sound was supposed to come in and play throughout this whole scene. There's a little irony, this pleasant little music box thing. Now here, when she shoots Magruder, we actually shot his brains being blown out, and you can see that in the supplementary material, the censored footage of Night of the Living Dead 90. That's the result of it.
It's like Uncle Reach. They're dead, but they're coming right for us.
No. I mean, it may sound strange coming from me, but I think sometimes the less you show, the better it is. The audience, like the crowbar or the Tyron going into the zombie on Alon's head, you finish that yourself, and it's more gruesome. But in a movie like this, with my name and George Romero's name on the film, you would expect a bloodbath. So my first reaction was this was sort of sterile. Now you hardly ever see this, bullet hits in flesh. That was obviously a rubber chest on this guy. This is a cab driver in the city of Pittsburgh. And that was also a censored scene. We did those head hits two ways. We had a big explosion in the back of the head for the entrance, or for the exit wound, but the MPAA made us use only the hits where you saw the forehead hit. Now, that forehead hit was done by taking breakaway glass, breakaway window glass, melting it, pouring it into a mold, a rubber silicone mold of a marble, pouring the glass out immediately, creating a hollow glass ball. And the effects guys would take hypodermic needles and inject blood into those balls. And right off camera, the special effects guys would take a blowgun and blow the marble, the blood-filled marble, right into the actor's forehead. And the glass would explode and blood would fly, and that was the forehead hit. There's more elaborate ways of doing that with rubber, with plastic appliances and air passages, but this was so easy and so simple. Matt Vogel, this was his gig. This was his suggestion, and it worked real well. However, I said before any actors get hit with these things, you should test it on me. So, if I do it, then the actors will feel easy doing it. Well, he, for some reason, had this extra thick ball. It made a big welt on my forehead. It was just too hard. And luckily, because we asked him to make him a lot thinner for the actors. And that zombie that you saw in the window was not originally the person that would appear at that window. We actually had the mother, Barbara's mother, on the set that night with her funny little hat and the flowers. And the whole reason for her picture on that tombstone at the beginning was so that you would recognize her when she appears in that window. Now, Barbara's mother just doesn't walk up to the window. The thing that does walk up to the window is this female zombie, a hideous female zombie. And Barbara is reluctant to shoot at it because in her mind, as she's looking at it, that hideous female zombie turns into her mother, which is, again, why the mother was on the set. We were going to actually shoot that scene. And Barbara's mother would look at her and say, "Where's Johnny, Barbara?" Totally freaking Barbara out, and prevents her from firing. Everyone around her is saying, "Shoot it, Barbara, shoot it." And they don't know why she's not shooting it, but they don't know that in her mind it's her mother. But eventually the mother turns, in Barbara's mind, back into that hideous zombie. Then she does fire. And that zombie flies from the outside. We shot a scene on the outside where that zombie does his head explode and he flies backwards and falls on the porch. Well, we grabbed that black cab driver and made him up, with the jaws, protruding jaws and the fake chest, which were going to be exit wounds later on, and we put him in the window and just shot him. This TV station is the very first thing that we shot in the film. And we shot it weeks before we started the major photography on the show.
A biologist in Stockton, California, have released a report stating that the bodies
of the recently dead are returning to life, driven by an unknown force that enables the brain to continue to function. Doctors at the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta reject that theory, calling it preposterous beyond belief.
I think this guy's name is Bill Cameron. He's a local actor, does a lot of stuff. If you look in the background here, there are people that are stopped in their tracks, and they're watching the television screen as well. A lot of people don't notice this, and why would you? Because you're focusing on the newscaster, but there's a point where all those people in the background start hovering around that TV. I don't know if we go so far in this film. It's been 10 years with my memory, but I think they also scatter and leave the TV station at some point out of fear. Person jumping into the frame coming up. I wanted that to be a recurring thing. We're safe, boing. Little chair jumper.
No, that's his up here, pal.
Will you get off my back? Damn it! Nice going, asshole! You smashed it!
You were taking it downstairs!
I was not taking it!
You stupid!
Fuck! Damn you!
Son of a bitch!
That was the only way to find out what was going on, and you smashed it! I wasn't taking it downstairs! You can't get any reception in the basement, dickhead!
What the hell is she doing?
Hey!
Okay. Where the hell is she going?
Is that your Uncle Reach?
Looks like him.
Do you think he might have a set of keys in this pocket?
You know, I was thinking you were talking to Jack Russo the other day about the ending of this film compared to the first film. In the first film, just by accident, Ben is shot, and he didn't like the idea of what Ben turns into in this film. And I'm thinking the reason in this film to do that is because Barbara becomes such a different character. Barbara is sort of taking over, and it's really Barbara at the end and not Ben anymore. And the first film, Barbara was gone way before the end. And I think that's probably why, just as a contrasting. Now here, this was also cut by the MPAA. This was a close shot on the Greg Funk zombie there.
We can get away.
Of a big exit wound in the back of his head. Blood just sprayed and filled the air.
Make it
5 miles,
but they wouldn't let us use any of these exit wounds.
Here, we'll bring back help.
We better make some kind of
or exit splatters
here.
And something we added in here as well is that the first film had a naked woman running around. Let's put a naked guy in too.
I'm right,
and that was also an exit wound that was cut by the MPA.
I got the keys.
And that's not really Pat Logan lying there either. That's a rubber dummy of him. And the problem was, every time they touched him, he was so light, he kept moving. Try not to shake him too much, girls. It's just a dummy. Pat weighs 300 pounds.
Damn it, get in here!
The numbers are growing, more and more zombies. Where are they all coming from? Why are they going to just this house? I think it's because of something we touched on. They are attracted by noise. There's a lot of noise coming out of that house with all the pounding and gunshots.
I want you to stay inside.
What?
Keep the rifle.
You can't go out without the gun.
Look, we have Tom's gun. Now, if something happens, I want that rifle in here. I don't want any locked doors in between me and this guy.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Shut up, Cooper. I don't want to hear another word out of you.
Speaking of gunshots, I had a 9mm blank gun on my person in this house. What I wanted to do was, when there was a gunshot, is actually fire this very, very loud 9mm blank gun in the house to get a reaction, to get a jolt from my actors. And one of the producers came in, who really doesn't know me very well and didn't know me, or he would have known, that, well, what I wanted to say, what he wanted me to do was smack two boards together for the gunshots, you know. And, you know, he had a good point. He had the safety of people in mind and all that, but I've always wanted to say, you know, I was a combat photographer in Vietnam, and I have a federal explosives license, and I know how to fire a blank gun in a room without killing anybody. But the guy had the safety of people in mind, and I really can't blame him, but as a director, if I can use that to get a jolt out of my actors, then that's what I wanted to do. Tall guy up there, that's Gayon Wilson, the cartoonist from Playboy magazine. We'll see him again later in close-up.
Now, we get that gas and start driving back. Get that kid up here fast. Judy, get in that truck, right? Get in, get it started. Don't stop no matter what happens. Tom and I keep those things off of you. You just move!
Ah, the token female zombie.
Heads up!
And the tall guy on the left, and the two people in front of him were the authors, Skip and Spectre. And he accidentally sets the house on fire and is quick enough to put it out. Thanks, Ben. And that zombie whose head he just set on fire comes back very shortly here. And this is Earl Ellis. Earl Ellis, one of the effects guys on the show, did the makeup on him. And we actually shot his head. We blew his head apart. In fact, I stood on the back of the truck with the double barrel shotgun. I fired both barrels at the same time with Magnum pellets and blew his head right off. And it was on this wonderful articulated dummy that when his head went off, he flew back and his arms flew up in the air. Now, people came to me later and thought that she's smiling here. And it does look like she's smiling, but she's not. It's her expression and the anxiety of getting away. She's not having a good time. It just looks like she's smiling.
We lost Ben!
Well, there was something I planned to do here that we didn't get to do because it was deemed it would take too much time. He obviously has the wrong gas pump key, so he, well, you'll see what happens. He takes a shotgun and blasts the lock off the gas pump, and of course, gas sprays everywhere. And, I originally had a torch lying right next to him on that platform, so when he blasts it and the gas splashes on him, he actually gets set ablaze. This is a great truck explosion, by the way. It's actually his flaming body running toward the truck. Of course, the gas cap is off the truck that sets the truck up. And then you really would believe that they all just died in this big ball of fire. I mean, believe it anyway, but I mean, he was right at the truck in flames anyway, and there's only one person left, and that's Katie.
I am.
If I can find any help, I'll be back.
We mustn't leave Dan.
This is where the black guy who appears in the window is going to get shot in the back, and the exit wounds would have been in his chest. These are all stunt zombies, stunt guys dressed as zombies that Tony fought.
But we should wait until Ben gets back.
I'll wait as long as I can, Helen. Right now, I want you in that cellar where it's safe.
But maybe we should...
Into the cellar, Helen. Now, your daughter needs you.
Now, I had something completely different planned for this scene here. She would go downstairs, and the little girl was on the table, and she's fading. She's really dying. She's wheezing. She's leaving us. And she gives her daughter mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. In the process of that mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, the daughter opens her eyes, and she's now a zombie. She actually bites her mother on the lip here. And then the mother tries to get away, and every time she looks back, the daughter is closer and closer. Never actually seen the daughter move, but she's closer and closer until the mother finds something to protect herself, which would be the trowel from the first film. And you think she's going to kill her with the trowel, but she doesn't. She just lets her feet on her. And there's the trowel. We had to put the trowel in somewhere. A little token trowel shot of blood splattering against it. But once again, there just would not have been enough time to get that footage in this night with all the other stuff going on.
I want that gun.
God, you go to hell.
Another power play from Harry.
I want that gun.
Give it up, Cooper. You crawl back in your...
Cooper!
Cooper!
Decided it was time for the lights to go out inside that house to make it even scarier and creepier. And we did it by having that zombie yank out that wire there accidentally. Good horror movie should be take place in the dark, don't you think? Example of I wanted to see contact, full contact, when they hit somebody, like this particular zombie. This guy is a treasury agent. This zombie in particular, he's one of the guys that helped me get my explosives license. And I've always promised him a part in something. Here you go, this is a rubber tube before. Whack. I really wanted to see contact. No punches pulled. Well, I actually took a tube before and made a mold and made a big rubber tube before. So I said to him, I says, hey, I got a part for you. I hope you don't mind getting beat up a bit. He says, cool, you think he's going to leave them alone? Maybe you think he's going to come back and finally shoot them, but no, what's this? My daughter.
Sarah? Shoot it. No.
Because she's walking. She's walking.
Shoot it.
Just... as she was asked to by the movement guy. You don't know how to make a human body work. Get it from that doorway over to them. An explosive charge on this balcony when Ben fires. somewhere in here. It actually takes out a section of the banister, but it's... Yeah, right there, if you cut that. We thought it was going to be bigger, but... this was cut. Another exit wound. I mean, a little bit of it was in there, but they really didn't want to show too much of it. This is something George came in and added now. I wanted to get Harry up into the attic somehow. The attic is actually inside the other room, behind that mirror. We actually went in and installed this trapdoor that is not in any of the previous scenes. And I was a little worried about that. Well, we don't see the string hanging down in all the previous scenes. Well, George said no one's going to notice that, and he was right.
We can still
this
make it.
It's totally logical. I was a little worried about planting this thing in here, but, George's wisdom, it worked.
Go! I'll bring help. I can't.
Go!
Ironic that Ben has to go down the basement to be safe now, where Harry has been telling him to go all the time. Patty could have shot that guy, but she's proving her point. They're so slow, you can just walk around them. And that's probably what's left of young Tom. I think the guy on the left is the James Mason zombie. All the zombies had names. It was much easier for the effects guys to say, send down the James Mason zombie, instead of, hey, send down the guy with the hole in his knee and a jacket, you know. This is Stacy Foster. Stacy Foster was in another Romero film, Monkey Shines, the brain girl. She actually auditioned for Barbara. This is a great moment for Patty. She could have just left her there, but... I think she just felt so sorry for her. Zombies from all walks of life. Airplane pilots. You know, we had clown zombies in Day of the Dead. Some circus gone awry. Out of the darkness comes McKee.
Thank you.
This is Jeffrey, our accountant. We promised him a part in the film. And this is what Jack was talking about. You know, he would suggest, let's take up a syringe and, you know, put it in somebody's arm and have them walk around like an IV. And those are, of course, gummy worms. This is a real mouse. And that's Richard. We called him the Rev. You know, I don't think Richard Ritchie. I think it's his real name. I don't think I've ever called him that. He's always the Rev, the Reverend. And these, I guess, are little vignettes that Jack Russo would come up with. This is the late Don Brockett, local Pittsburgh entertainer. I think we mentioned before that when you're born in Pittsburgh, one of the things you want to do when you grow up is be a zombie in one of George Romero's movies, and here they are. This is actually George's voice on the radio. Tony was doing a thing throughout the entire film. I think every time he took a cigarette out, he wanted to somehow indicate how very few he had. And so that by this time, he's down to his very last cigarette. It's something, I don't know if it comes across, but it's something he wanted to do. This is it, his very last cigarette. And here's the irony. Oh, actually, he's laughing at what's being said on the radio, which leads him to look up and see what could have saved everybody. The gas pump keys. This is too much for him. I wanted this whole scene to be done in just the light from his flashlight. And so in this particular scene right here, when the flashlight batteries start to go, you know that Ben's starting to go, and then you hear him laugh throughout this darkness. And from this darkness, we are panned down to the outside and show Patty outside. And so the compromise was simply to do a dissolve from the blackness to Patty already in the woods. Johnny right there, the Johnny dummy. I don't know how many people caught that. We put the gloves on it, so that would help you know that it was Johnny. This is Bill Butler, Greg Mott, two local actors in Pittsburgh, do a lot of stage work.
Jupiter's balls are you doing out here alone, little lady?
And here's where we diverge from the original film. This is a bit of a sequel that you get in the same film now. And a lot of people, a lot of fans tell me that they think this is the helicopter from Dawn of the Dead with Ken Foray and Galen Ross and Flyboy and Scotty. But for us, it is the police helicopter. Or
thank you.
This attitude is touched upon in the original film with the hunter types, the posse types searching out the zombies. We went a little further here. Actually, that's Johnny, Russ Dreiner from the original film, and Bill Cardill from the original film, playing the same role, a newscaster. In fact, I remember sending somebody back to the hotel room for this eye patch I had in my desk drawer. I said, let's put an eye patch on Johnny, make him a little more interesting to look at. But the thing that we touched on in the first film is more elaborate here, with the attitude of the posse, the hunters, on these zombies. I mean, which prompts Patty to say, they're us and we're them. We're who? We're no better than them. We're worse than them, perhaps. We're using them for sport, same as a deer.
Having fun.
Give me a break.
Jim Feng, the art director, came to me and said, how do you want this camp to be set up? I said, it has to be portable. It has to look like they just arrived, just set this thing up, and it's not really a full-fledged carnival going on here. They had to, it's like a portable feeding stations, portable games, whatever. It had to be portable. They didn't, they just arrived. This is, I think, one of the days where we were waiting for the rain to stop. Toward the end of the shoot, we got hit with really bad weather. We were lucky to get this day. The rain stopped, and we built the bonfire. But this is late in the day. We wasted the whole morning just waiting for the rain to stop. Most of those are rubber dummies up there, and we replaced the people that were just put on the bonfire with rubber dummies, and we actually burned them all. Every wig I had in my shop, every body part, every dummy that we could find, we used in that bonfire. Big difference here now in between the first film. Ben is now a full-fledged zombie. I mean, you can tell because look at his eyes. And he died down there during the night. Was that a slight moment of recognition between him and Patty or Barbara?
Whoa.
Those were metal squibs on his face underneath rubber appliances. Really explosive squibs that would go off on cue. Here it's supposed to be all over, another guy jumping into the frame. Another little scare, little chair jumper.
You came back.
His exit wound was also cut by the MPAA. It was a big bloody mess.
It's another one for the fire.
Most of these people are crew people. I think the girl in the coveralls was a continuity person, I think. But we filled it up with crew members. I had a photographer running around in here, too. I don't know if you see him in the... Yeah, there he is, right there. That's Declan Baldwin. He's the production manager, the guy with the camera. The whole purpose of him being there, taking these pictures... it was supposed to be a big, old-fashioned flash thing, was so that when we go to just stills at the end, there were his stills that you would see, or at least some photographic, some photo, 8x10 photo motif that we cut to now at the end. Which is, again, a homage to the first film. I mean, these shots right here could be in the first film. As stills toward the end. Black and white photos of people wielding hooks, and except for the bonfire, of course. Okay, well, this is Tom Savini signing off on Night of the Living Dead 90. Thanks for watching it, and we're sitting here in Pittsburgh. where we shot this film. It's been 10 years. It was fun going back and looking at all this stuff again, remembering all the old memories, smelling the old smells, you know how it is. Thanks for coming.